You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
I should be writing number 405 for Friday, March 29th, 2019. Hi there, welcome to I Should Be Writing, the podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Merle Lafferty. I wrote a long post about this to Patreon supporters, but now I am telling you about it in audio form. I'm doing this in the car. You know, I start so many podcasts in the car, and then I just think, I'm not going to use that. It's kind of a shame, really. Because I get introspective. Anyway, you'll probably notice that there's not been a lot of posting so far this year. Finally, this week, I've come to terms with the fact that I have been having a sort of depressive period. Depression's really hard to pin down because people think it's being sad when, for me, it manifests in just not doing anything. And I have several reasons why. You know, I've been traveling a couple of times. I had some pet drama. I had, and I've been getting a pint of blood taken every month since October for medicinal purposes, believe it or not. And that is really kicking my butt now for like 3 days. And then, you know, I can't exercise or anything for several days after that. But really, on days where I have no excuses, I look at my to-do list and think, none of that's important. And I realized today that basically I'm stuck. Not stuck, like, on a plot point. I'm just, I feel like I'm stuck in the mud, and I'm not doing anything. So, once I realized that, thought about it, and today I've been productive, which is refreshing. You know, I'm recorded to Ditch Diggers, I'm recording this. I'm hoping it continues. I'm hoping. You know, I'll sometimes have a day where I'm really productive, but I'll wear myself out, and then the next day I'll be feeling crappy again. But since this is a writing podcast, I wanted to talk about my book. I believe I mentioned in the last episode how I was having some trouble with characterization. I'm still having trouble. And I think that's slowing me down when really the way to deal with it is to power through. I often find answers to plot problems by writing. And if I'm writing, then I can probably flesh these characters out. And then I can fix the early, you know, dialogue and actions as on edits. So realizing that, sort of freeing. It's sort of freeing. I've been doing a lot more thinking than writing lately, and sometimes that can be justified, and sometimes it's just avoiding work. And it's really hard to tell the difference. But since I promised you guys a look at novel creation, this novel is due July 1st. And that's still far enough away to where if I wrote every day, I would not have to write even 1,000 words at the word count I'm at now. You know, time still moves, and every day I don't do a bit of writing, that's another day I move toward the deadline. The latest Ditch Diggers, Matt and I talk about how you have peaks and valleys in your career, and how that's actually good, because if you peaked all the time, it would be overwhelming. But both he and I had very productive and successful and exciting years last year. Last year was the best of my creative life, my professional life. But now, this year, things have slowed down. I have one book coming out, and it's the middle grade book that I wrote. And that's it. I'm doing a lot of working on things instead of releasing things. And, you know, you'd think that's sad, but that's how it goes. It's, you have the parts of your career where everything is like fireworks and excitement, and then you have the parts that are bland, and you still have to write every day, or every other day, or whenever. I know some people actively rail against the whole write every day, and in my opinion, as long as you're getting writing done, it doesn't matter how often you write, but you still have to get it done. I've also been writing non-linearly, because even though I'm not sure what exactly happens next in my book, I do know of some key points that happen. There's, and I know of one character's, how it's going to be revealed that she has the means to do the job. I've been watching a lot of Midsummer Murders, which is really good, and it's absurd on a level. I think I've talked about it before. I think I talked about it last time. If you can look on Twitter and find the Midsummer Murders bot, where it almost mocks the whole, actually it does mock the weirdness and intricacies of these murder mysteries. One thing I find strange and unfortunate is this show leans a lot on the idea of hidden homosexuality or hidden incest. It's like you don't even consider these two people because they clearly hate each other, but secretly they're lovers. And it's a scandal because they're either the same sex or they're brother and sister or whatever. It's kind of weird. One time they kind of mixed it up where they had an out character and he was in a relationship with somebody else on the show who was not out. So that mixed it up a little bit, but still, the secret gay person was a plot point. I don't know. It just feels like it's a ridiculous plot point to keep going back to, a ridiculous trope to overuse. But one thing I love about Midsummer Murders is it's a lot of the people have many connections. Those are revealed throughout the plot, that these people that you didn't think were connected are connected. Whether it is a secret familial bond or secret lover or just former colleagues, or they knew each other in school or something. And I think a lot of mystery hangs on old ties. I know I can't strip all the car noise out of this recording, but I don't know if you can hear the rain or not. It might be distracting. It might be pleasant. It's raining harder. You can probably hear it by now. I think one thing that's funny about having a writing career is you always think other people's careers are going so much more interestingly than yours, but what you don't think about is the people you're not hearing from. You're only hearing from the people who are releasing a book or finishing a book or getting a book deal or getting a TV deal, but you don't realize that there are many, many more people that you probably know that you're not hearing from, but they're not on your radar because they're not trumpeting anything, because they don't have anything to trumpet, because, like you, they're just busting their butts. And now it's raining very hard. All right, I'm back, and I'm still in the car, but I'm not driving, and it's not raining. The magic of time jump.
So one thing I remembered is I wanted to do a feedback show because, Lord, it's been a while. So I'm going to do as many as I can do until my daughter's done with the dentist, and then I'll come back and do more, or I'll do another show. Oh, man, these are a year old, literally. I don't even know. I don't even know what's wrong with me. It's, wow. Wow, this depresses me all over again. Jeez. Okay. I apologize to everybody. I'm tempted to just wipe the slate clean so I don't have to admit how old these are, but I'm not going to do that because you guys asked me questions, and I'm going to answer them. And, yeah, get a little better about this. Okay. Joel writes, I've been listening to your I Should Be Writing podcast. I want to thank you for sending your advice and encouragement out into the universe. Over the years, I've written a lot of what I would call character and scene sketches, but after getting trapped in endless revising, I've committed to writing 500 words every morning without revision until I finish. I'm about 40,000 words into my manuscript, which is as far as I've ever gotten on a single story. I have four POV characters, one of which is meant to be the antagonist. I just now noticed I don't find pure antagonists as POV characters in books I'm reading. Is this a rule I missed? Thank you so much. Well, the thing is, I don't know what you mean by pure antagonist. A really good view of this is Game of Thrones, where the antagonist does not think they're the antagonist in their story. The antagonist is just, you know, somebody who is in the way of the protagonist. The antagonist is the person in front of you counting out, at the store, counting out their change to pay for a $7 item. And you were in a hurry. That's your antagonist. You know, Game of Thrones, the Game of Thrones series by George R.R. Martin does this really well because people like Jaime Lannister get POV chapters. Cersei gets chapters. And even though they're still reprehensible people, you get a sense of the world from their point of view, and you can at least understand a little bit of why they are who they are. And, you know, a story where someone is wah-ha-ha-ha-ha evil is not actually very interesting. There's a really, really good Neil Gaiman short story called Grail, and it's about an old woman who buys the Holy Grail at a thrift store. And Galahad comes to her door seeking the Grail. And she won't give it up because it looks nice on her mantelpiece. It's just a really awesome story. I did a online short story critique course, or just studying the craft of short story, and we talked about Grail, and it's in third person, but it is from that woman's point of view. You don't get to see Galahad go on his adventures to try to find more and more impressive stuff to trade her for the Grail. You just get to see her living her nice little life. But someone points out that she's Galahad's antagonist, this nice little old lady who just will not give up the Grail that's on her mantelpiece. She's not evil. She's not aggressive. She's not fighting him. But she's in his way. That's an antagonist. So I highly recommend that. I don't know where you can find it, but there are many, many Neil Gaiman short story collections around. It's called Grail. Kyle says, I've been listening to a lot of interviews with writers, and they all seem to be talking about story beats. What are story beats? How do I know if I have enough of them? Well, that sounds like something interesting to talk to do a full episode on. But the shortest way to talk about this is a screenwriter named Blake Snyder did a book called Save the Cat many years ago. And some people love it, some people hate it, but it is often considered the best book on storytelling beats. And it's for scripts, but it works for novels too. And a beat is like the hero's journey sometimes, when specific things happen in the story to where things change. So you have the beat of introduce your hero. In romance, you've got the beat of introduce the love interest. In mysteries, you've got the beat of the murder. And then you've got several beats of red herrings and stuff. But, you know, when you get to the point of the hero is given their quest and they turn it down. Luke Skywalker is talking to Ben Kenobi and he's like, no, we have to go to Alderaan. He's like, I got to go to Alderaan. I got to do the moisture farming, whatever that was. And so he's offered the quest. He says, no, that is a story beat. He goes home. His family's slaughtered. He has nowhere to be. So he's forced to go on his quest. That's another story beat. But I recommend, I'll probably do a show on it. But I do recommend the Blake Snyder book. Actually, a woman took his formula and did a book called Save the Cat Writes a Novel. And took all of his stuff and put it into more novel-type forms. And that book came out, I think, last year, and I found it really useful. So I highly recommend that one. I can't remember who wrote it, but just look for Save the Cat Writes a Novel. Adam writes with the age-old problem of day job, being a new father, and can't find the time to write. You have any advice for those of us with more rigid schedules and or higher priorities in our lives? In the email, he says he's tried the morning writing and it's not feasible. There are two things. One, well, you wrote this last year, so you're a year older now. It's still true. The fact that you're a new parent is overwhelming to you, and it's scary because you think that nothing will ever change. Your life changes so drastically, you can't imagine ever going back, and you won't go back, but moving forward, it gets easier. The baby years feel like they are limitless, and they're not. So if you need to take time off, take it. You know, your kid will stop needing you 24/7. The second thing is, there are things in your life that you don't schedule. There's TV time, tablet gaming time, hobby time, times with friends. And if you really want to get writing done, you need to find one of those and make it a lower priority. And I know it's so hard when you're tired. And you need that downtime. But if that downtime is the only time that you have without priorities, then you have to decide whether writing is more important to you. The little trick is, promise yourself you're just going to write 100 words. 50 words, even. If you manage to sit down, get settled, and start writing your 50 words, odds are you're going to get more than 50. And if you don't, well, you made your goal. 50 words, no problem. Find some downtime that you can give up, because, I mean, there's got to be something. Tiny goals to hit, and you may find that you'll write more than your tiny goals. And if you don't, then you still... A tiny goal is easy to hit. Those are my two things. Other concerns involve networking. Do you have any tips for introverts who don't normally reach out to others? Matt and I talk about this a lot on our other podcast, Ditch Diggers. He goes on to say, I feel like I should have something to present before I start networking. How much should I have available to show editors, agents, peers before delving in? Nothing. You don't have to show them anything. That's not what networking is. Networking is being friendly and talking to people and talking about things that you enjoy and find in common. It's been like 11 years since I had Neil Gaiman on the show, and his career has gone in many different directions. Maybe I should see if I could get him back. But the story I've heard about how his career, one big step in his career is he was at a con talking to somebody at a bar about how much they loved Douglas Adams. And you know, he didn't say, I'm a freelance journalist. I'm looking for work. He's like, I love Douglas Adams. Let's talk about Douglas Adams. And the person he was talking to happened to be the person who was doing a book on Douglas Adams. And so many months later, Gaiman got a call, I guess back then it would have been a call, saying, I was doing a book on Douglas, I was publishing a book on Douglas Adams and my writer fell through. Would you be interested in it? That's networking. Find people at a con or at a book event and talk about something that you both have in common. Whether it's one of the easiest things to do if you want to talk to an agent or an editor is ask them what their clients or authors are working on. Ask what's coming out new. They love to talk about that stuff. You don't have to show them anything. You want them to remember you as that interesting person who brought up how much they enjoy Elizabeth Baer. You know, my networking that I didn't even know I was doing was this podcast. Because I was interviewing Lev Grossman at Worldcon one year, and we had a nice interview, enjoyed talking to each other, and it was the day of the Hugo ceremonies where he was up for the Campbell Award. And he asked me, you know, just chatting afterwards, if he would see me at the parties that night. And I said, well, no, I'm not nominated for anything, so I'm not invited to the parties. And he's like, oh, I've got a plus one I'm not using. Would you like to go? And I'm like, well, hell yeah. You know, I got into the party and I stood in line for a drink and I started talking to somebody and I can't even remember what we talked about. I was just friendly to her and she was friendly to me. That woman ended up buying my first book. She didn't buy my first book because she talked to me in line, but I made a good impression on her. And when my book came across her, she remembered me as that person she talked to. That's how networking works. It's not you handing over your manuscript. If you have something ready and the author or agent or the editor or agent asks you about it, like, what are you working on? Have your elevator pitch ready. An elevator pitch is just in brief, writing about a boy who finds out that he's a wizard and there's a magical war brewing and he's the key to it. Don't say that one, but I'm just saying. If they sound interested, they may ask for pages. At that point, you go home and you bust your ass to make a really good packet for them and finish it. Or finish the first three chapters, whatever. It's good to be working on something, but you don't have to have anything to show them right then. Networking is just being friendly and outgoing, and I know that's really hard for introverts. But believe it or not, there are a lot of people at cons who are introverts who understand the whole introvert thing and can help. Rachel writes, one of your earlier podcasts, you mentioned you stopped writing for about 10 years. Can I ask why? Can I ask how you managed to get back into the field after taking so much time off? What obstacles did you have to overcome? I stopped because I was graduating from high school, or I was graduating from college, and I wasn't taking classes anymore. There was somebody in my last creative writing class who was much better than I was. I decided that I would never get any better. I would never become a better writer because I was done with school. And in my mind, this guy had already beaten me. This guy was not a bad guy. He was very friendly. I liked him a lot. But for some reason, it was like in my mind, there was only one spot for a new writer in 1995, and that spot was taken by Dan Coyce. Incidentally, Dan writes for Slate now. And then, of course, and you know, this wasn't like a conscious thing. It was just I slowed down. I lost confidence. I was working full time. I was looking for a corporate job. I was falling in love. And writing just became this thing that I wanted to do someday. And I would think up story ideas and not do anything about it. What changed was I wanted to get a job in my company. I was working for a computer game company. And I wanted to get a job, move into game design. I failed because they literally said they didn't want to take anybody from marketing and put them in game design. Which is just baffling because my marketing experience wasn't really the point. But anyway. Sorry. Old memory. Bitter. But the guy that they ended up hiring for that position turned out to be a very good friend of mine. Or rather, he became a very good friend of mine. And I told him that I'd always wanted to be a writer. And he's like, well, why aren't you? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I'm ready. He's like, well, you won't be ready until you start writing. And he kind of guided me into writing more often. And then he helped me get my first job at writing for White Wolf. So I was writing for RPGs. And that just started my career off. So it was deciding that I was not good enough. Having somebody go, well, you'll never be good enough unless you keep working at it. So that's why I took 10 years off. Rachel also mentions she's trying to get into the full-time, dealing with full-time work and being an adult and starting creative pursuits. And let me just tell you something. I cannot read music. I cannot keep a rhythm. My family is very musical, and so that's daunting. And I just started music lessons yesterday because I wanted to. Sorry, got a phone call, and it was spam. Shouldn't have taken it. Anyway, the point is, and I agree, it's terrifying. Because as adults, we've had our lives to hone whatever we're working on, and therefore, starting something new is for kids. Because when kids mess up at something, well, they're kids, it's okay. But when an adult messes up at something, it's like, what the hell's wrong with you? Well, what's wrong with me is I'm starting something new. I think it's mostly a Western thing, but we also don't look kindly on mistakes. Mistakes are how you learn, and yet we penalize mistakes. Just remember that mistakes are how we learn. I will remember that as I practice my music, and you can remember that as you practice your writing. I have a Swedish listener. Pardon me if I get the accents wrong on your name, but Malin or Malin writes, essentially how to edit when you have ADD. I've been trying to edit a book for a year now, and I just can't seem to make myself do it. Do you experience this, and if so, how do you tackle it? I am a new struggler with ADD, and I'm still not sure. But the thing is that the first step is the absolute hardest. The opening up the file and looking at it. The editing's actually not that hard, but it's knowing that you're going in there to edit something that's just daunting. So again, like I said earlier, if you make your goal, I'm just going to edit one page. The biggest step is opening the dang file and reading anybody's notes on the book, if you've given anybody the book. And then you edit one page, and hopefully you'll find that the editing was not nearly as difficult as opening up the file was. I find when I give myself little victories to hit, for some reason I find things are easier. Sometimes I trick my mind and just say, I'm going to take today off, and then I relax and I don't have any pressure, and then I can write, which is just ridiculous. But I'm just telling you, my own mind hacks. There are a lot of comments in here about podcasts, and I'm just going to skip over those because I have so many to go through, so sorry about that. But rest assured that I have read it if you sent me something. Isabella finds herself stuck on revising. I've said it takes less time to revise than write, because the words are already there. But it takes me so much longer to get through a chapter I've already written because I find I'm so unsatisfied with what I've written down. How do you combat this? I feel as though I've gone over my book so many times I'm sick of it, and I don't know if I'm driving myself crazy revising paragraphs that shouldn't be revised further. If that's the case, put the book down. Put it down and do something else. If you've revised it 6 times, then I think you either need to have it, it's either done and you need to send it out, or you need to start something new. But yes, you can revise it into oblivion. All right, third attempt. I have nothing pressing on me. I don't have to be anywhere for 2 hours, and I think I can get it done by then. So we're going to do this, and we're going to do it right. Back to the emails. Neil says, one thing I've always had trouble with is sticking to with a story till the end. I would always find a more interesting character than the protagonist or antagonist of the story I was working on and start something new with them. It seems like a never-ending style. Cycle. How do I know which story to stick with and which to scrap? Stick with your original story. Once your brain gets into the actual work of writing a story, it's going to look for more interesting, shiny things. And suddenly, you're going to get a whole bunch of ideas for a whole bunch of other stories. Now, this is cool because it means your brain is an idea-generating engine. And the more you use it, the stronger it gets. But it's very distracting. So if you come up with another idea, write it down, and then go back to your first idea, because you will never finish something if you let this shiny stuff distract you. I just want to say that I talk about my mental health a lot on this show, and a lot of you write back to say that what I've said speaks to you or something you needed to hear, and I'm not going to read your stuff on the show because that's personal, but I want you to know that I read everything, and I'm very glad to that me airing my laundry is reaching people. It's one of the reasons why I do it, just to let you know that you're not alone. Stephen writes, I'm looking for beta readers, and I'm wondering what your process is with letting them read it and getting feedback. Do you give them the whole book and let them get back to you, or do you go chapter by chapter, and how many beta readers do you recommend? I actually don't use beta readers. I've not had good luck with them. I know several authors who do, and I believe they just give the book and they give a deadline and say, please get me comments back by this deadline. And if the person misses the deadline, well, then their comments really don't matter because you have to keep working on the book and getting it in. I've tried to use beta readers and found that a lot of people end up not reading it, which I try not to take personally because there are a lot of things that I try to do and I've dropped the ball on because of time or life or whatever, but I just stopped using it. If you can, I would say start with maybe two just so you can compare their opinions. If you have two people you trust who are good readers, voracious readers, and are willing and interested, then ask them to read your book. Tell them specifically what you want comments on. Don't lead them. Don't be like, is the main character believable or not? But you want to say, I want notes on characterization. I want notes on conflict. I want notes on continuity. Hopefully they'll get back to you and honor that. Anthony writes, when I participated in NaNoWriMo, I didn't finish the first draft of the book I was writing. I've not gone back and read what I've written yet. In your opinion, since it's been more than 6 months, which of the following is my best bet? Start again and rewrite from beginning, edit what I have, then continue writing from there, reread what I have, and then continue from there. Just start off where I left off without rereading and write until I'm finished. I would reread without a plan. And then if you feel good about, I mean, it's probably going to need editing, of course, but I don't mean if it's perfect. I mean, if you feel good about the direction it's going, reread and then continue. If you read it and it makes no sense or it's terrible or, and by terrible, I mean like the continuity is bad or the characters, not even if the characters, but if the continuity is bad, then that's terrible. If the characters are flat, you can fix that on edits. You know, there's a lot of stuff you can fix on edits. If the plot's going in the absolute wrong direction, then you might want to start over. But if the continuity's there and you still mostly like the skeleton of your characters, then reread and then continue. Because if you start editing and you don't need to, you're just going to, you know, edit yourself into oblivion. You're going to edit what you have, and then you might go, well, let me reread it and check it again and see if I need to edit it again. And that's one thing that beginners writers, that's why I really, really say I don't recommend beginning writers edit as they write, because they can just get into an endless cycle of editing. Pro writers do, and if it works for them, great. But I try not to, because I will fall down that hole. Corey asked for me to share what my work week looks like, if I'm comfortable doing that. Well, the only thing that makes me uncomfortable doing that is the fact that I am still struggling after many, many, many years to come up with a schedule that works for me. One of my biggest pet peeves is when people say, wow, I wish I had all day to write. Or they say, I wish I could take a sabbatical from work and write. And I'm thinking, if you don't write when you have 30 minutes, you're not going to write when you have 8 hours. Trust me, distractions loom large. I mean, right now, I want to work on my book, but my podcast, which, no offense to you guys, but are a lower priority than my writing, still is distracting and is, this is my procrastination, which is shameful to say, but it's true. Ideally, my goal, actually I have it written down on my notepad in front of me, is I'd like to get up early and write in the morning and then every day deal with something else that another project I have later on, such as I'm editing or co-editing Escape Pod or one of the podcasts that I run. And, you know, I'm the primary at-home parent, so I have a lot of domestic stuff to do. Ideally, that would be it, but often it's just flail around, do whatever seems to be on fire, and then suddenly realize it's 4 o'clock. It's hard to work for yourself. It really is, because nobody's there to tell you you need to get back to work. So, it's something I struggle with, and I'm ashamed to say it, but I'll be perfectly honest. Ideally, I would love a schedule, write early, and then spend a good amount on everything else I have going on, but it's usually the opposite. Because I like to have a clean mental slate when I start writing, which I should not need because I should be able to write in any way, in any place, because that actually gets the work done. Andrew writes, say you want to use a real-life person in your novel or have your characters interact with them, what sort of can of worms can this open? I know there's usually a disclaimer of all people in this novel are fictional, etc., but if there's someone who's not, what sort of hoops would one have to jump through for this to be okay? And then Andrew gives an example from Ernest Cline's Armada, where he mentions Neil deGrasse Tyson and Stephen Hawking. I am not a lawyer. I'm not a intellectual property or copyright lawyer or whatever, but there are people who are considered public figures whose names and likenesses are not entirely their own. And Neil deGrasse Tyson and Stephen Hawking would be considered some of those people. If you present them in a bad way, then they can sue you, which is why you put that disclaimer in there. I'd look it up online. There are clear. Oh, hang on. I just saw this like laid out easily. Oh, interesting. There's a self-publisher's legal handbook by Helen Sedwick. The ad for the book starts out with Scarlett Johansson won a defamation suit against a French writer for creating a promiscuous character who happened to look like the movie star. A Georgia jury awarded $100,000 to a woman who claimed a character in The Red Hat Club falsely portrayed her as an alcoholic, expletive deleted. So you face defamation, invasion of privacy, and misappropriation of the right to publicity. If what you write about a person is positive or even neutral, then you don't have defamation or privacy issues. Common sense and cool head are a key. To prove defamation, whether libel for written statements or slander for spoken ones, a plaintiff must prove false statement of an identifiable person that is published, causes reputational harm, and made with actual malice or negligence. Invasion of privacy claims, that is where the target must have a reasonable expectation of privacy, where public figures do not. A movie star lounging topless on a yacht should not be surprised that a camera with a long lens is pointing her way. Misappropriation of the right of publicity is like using a person's image in an advertisement. Same applies for lookalikes or soundalikes. Merchandise, selling t-shirts, etc. with unauthorized images, impersonations, Impersonating a celebrity for commercial purposes, all those Elvis impersonators either have permission or are taking legal risks. Well, what about parody? I guess it actually has to be a parody, not an impersonation. Those are different. Anyway, implied endorsement or relationship. Wrongfully implying that someone has endorsed your work or is involved in its production. This is U.S. law, by the way. So I'm not going to go through the whole blog post. This is, again, the book is Helen Sedgwick, Self-Publisher's Legal Handbook. I can't endorse it because I haven't read it, but this blog post looks pretty useful for what you're looking for. Oh my God, I'm up to February. These are not too late. Hooray. Shondell writes, having trouble pantsing, decided to plot, but getting stuck on character. I keep finding a bunch of here are 100 questions you should be able to answer about your characters, useless things like what is your character's favorite food or what is your character's favorite color. I don't want to waste time answering all these questions for every character. What would you say are the most important things you need to know about the characters in your book? The things about those lists are those kinds of details really make the character human. I used a lot of the characters' favorite foods in Six Wakes. Sansa Stark and her love of lemon cakes. That's comes up time and again in Song of Ice and Fire series. Things like food connect us to our roots, our childhood. I mean, if your character's favorite food is, like from childhood, is sushi, or your character's favorite food from childhood is no-brand box mac and cheese, you get a different sense of what kind of family they grew up with. Affluent or poor, or perhaps they were a child of who was extraordinarily picky. These little details really do a lot to flesh out a character. Is it tedious as hell? Yes. And if you've been listening to the last two episodes, you know that I am coming up against exactly the same thing you are. And a friend of mine suggested that I write out an interview with my characters. Not quite like the 100 questions, but just ask them interview questions and answer in their voice. And that will hopefully help flesh them out. I haven't done that yet. I actually plan on doing that this week. I'll let you know how it goes next time. Those things that seem kind of pointless, everything we do sends out a signal about us. What you wear, what you eat, what your favorite things are, what you scorn, what you get mad at when other people scorn it. I mean, all of those things say something about you. And so if you give your characters that information, then they're really going to pop off the page and speak to your readers. Is it tedious, or rather, is it necessary to do for every character? No, I don't think so. Unless you're doing like a Martin-type epic where you've got how many quote-unquote main characters. But, you know, we know Tyrion's love of beer. We know Sansa's love of lemon cakes. We know Cersei's love of wine. And all of those things tell us something about the characters. So I would say take your most important characters, your protagonist, your antagonist, some supporting characters, and go through as many questions as you can to see how they flesh out. And then you should have a better sense of who they are. And I'm going to do it right beside you, Shondell. So we will circle back to this and talk about it later. As I mentioned, I'm doing a different thing with this podcast now. I'm going to be stepping back from interviews. I apologize, but I'm going to be turning down all interviews for now because I try to be honest. I'm sorry, even when it's embarrassing. But in doing this feedback, I've discovered how little content I put out for you last year, and it's absolutely shameful. And I think I need to narrow my scope and focus on some very detailed, small episodes. And the first one, again, as I said, is going to be about my novel. It's going to be about 6 episodes long. This is the second one. And then I'm going to go on to another topic. And if I feel like I get my footing again with this show, then I will maybe open it up to interviews again. But for now, they're closed. I have a shiny new website. It is merverse.com still. But if you're a Patreon supporter, you can see Patreon-only posts. And all you have to do is go to the post and it'll say, hey, this is locked. Log in via Patreon here. I don't see any of your information. You don't give me your Patreon password or any of that. You just acknowledge that you're a supporter via Patreon, and then you can see stuff on my site. It's pretty cool. I don't know how it works. That's why I paid somebody else to do it. Thank you, Jeremy Tolbert. Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I haven't done a whole lot there yet, but I will be doing so in the future. If you want to support the Patreon, it is patreon.com/mightymer. And at merverse.com, you can see my other books that are available. Besides the book that is the companion to this show I should be writing, there's my fiction, 6 Wakes, and Solo, a Star Wars story. And as I mentioned, I co-edit Escape Pod. I have another podcast called Ditch Diggers with Matt Wallace. And I think that's all I do. I do a lot of stuff. It's hard to keep up with everything. But I hope you're having a good time. I hope you're writing a lot. And I hope this podcast helps you. And I promise it will not be a very long time until we talk again. Until then, you should be writing. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymer. I Should Be Writing theme music provided by John Anilio. You can find more about him at johnanilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. But I should be writing.